flurry of sightings in Virginia during the latter part of December and on through January and a short part of February sent NICAP officials to the state to gather whatever information they could find. Two sightings were investigated thoroughly by NICAP. Mr. Hall now gives us the details.
We interviewed or investigated two separate landing reports over there. One was the December 21st case reported by Horace Burns of Grottoes, who said he saw a UFO cross the road ahead of his car. His car stalled and the object landed in the field. We visited with Professor Ernest Gaiman of the Eastern Mennonite College, and he has done a very thorough investigation job for us. He is an ICAP member. The other incident was more recent. I believe the date was January 19, also near Waynesboro. This involved a man who said that he had witnessed a UFO landing and saw some small beings emerge from the object. There was no kind of communication. He just was confronted by these beings, and he stated that he was very frightened by the experience. Now, I hasten to add that we don't necessarily believe this story 100%. We're interested in objective scientific investigation, and that's why we were there. But one point I would like to make is that this man very obviously had been intimidated by some kind of government agents, unidentified. We don't know who they were, Air Force, FBI, CIA. But it was very obvious from talking to this man's friends, who are very responsible local citizens, that this man had been intimidated and could not talk about his experience.
Mr. Hall, in your investigation of these two sightings, were there any material evidence of a craft of some kind landing?
No, in the first case, December 21st, there was physical evidence. Professor Gaiman investigated the site and tested it with a Geiger counter and found extremely high radioactivity at where the object had been seen to land. This was later denied by the Air Force, or they implied that Professor Gaiman was a professor of German and didn't know what he was doing. But the Air Force failed to mention that a couple of DuPont engineers were also present and verified the high radioactivity. And this is a good form of physical evidence, as was the fact that the man's car motor failed as the UFO passed by. In the second case, there was no physical evidence, but there had been several rain and snowstorms in between the sighting and the investigation, so this is not too surprising.
As you heard Mr. Hall said in the case up at Grottoes, the man said that when the alleged UFO hovered over his car or passed over it, his engine stalled out. This also happened in the case of a sighting in Williamsburg, which you are probably familiar with, where two men were driving down the highway and in separate cars. Both men said their cars stalled out as they came within sight of a large cone-shaped object hovering over a field. These sightings and sightings in years gone by have also shown cases where electronic effects have come about when the UFO had been sighted. I asked Mr. Hall if there was any explanation for this.
Yes, we have a section in the UFO evidence report which lists past cases of so-called electromagnetic interference. There is no known explanation for this. There are a few guesses that it apparently is some powerful electrostatic field causing it, but the exact mechanism of how it works, nobody knows.
Another case on record concerning these electromagnetic interferences happened several years ago when a group of jet planes were heading out to sea down somewhere in the southern part of the country near Florida, and something happened and they never returned again. So they sent another Coast Guard plane out to try to find them, see if perhaps they had crashed or something, and this plane too would never return. And although they could never be sure, they believed that some kind of electronic interference had caused their radar and their compass to go completely out of whack, and thus they lost their course and simply ran out of fuel in the middle of the Atlantic. This is too a very interesting case. It has been the policy of the press, both presses, to report on UFO sightings only within the state that the sighting occurs. I hasten to add here that both presses here in Virginia, I think, gave very excellent coverage to sightings here in the Virginia area. And for this reason, Richmonders did not know whether Virginia was the only place where flying saucers were being seen during December and January. We, of course, knew they were being seen here. And until this report, I feel, most Richmonders didn't have any idea that there were sightings elsewhere during the same period. We asked Mr. Hall about this.
Yes, as a matter of fact, when the sightings were occurring in Virginia, they were actually occurring all up and down the East Coast. And apparently, these stories very seldom go out on news wires outside of a given state. So the overall picture is not realized by anyone in one state. We did get sightings at the same time from New Hampshire. Incidentally, there was a case of a car being stalled as the UFO passed over in New Hampshire. There were sightings in Massachusetts, Connecticut, North Carolina, and Georgia. But when the sightings stopped in the Virginia area, they also stopped up and down the coast, and now they have shifted out to the West Coast, and we're starting to get very similar reports from Washington State, Idaho, Oregon, and all that region. There was one case where a border patrolman reported seeing a large disc-shaped object which descended and hovered above his car, ahead of his car, and then after hovering for a few seconds, zoomed back up through the overcast and disappeared. On the same night, there was a reported landing in which the object left markings on the ground. It's the same sort of thing. It's been very consistent over the years, but appears to be an unusual number of reported landings in the past year or so.
One thing in my mind, which has never been quite clear, and has left me to a very small extent a skeptic of some sightings of UFOs, has been the unusual number of sightings of different types of objects and sizes, too. They have ranged from round disc 3 to 5 feet in diameter to large cigar-shaped objects as much as 500 feet in diameter. The ones in Williamsburg and Grottoes here in Virginia reported cone-shaped objects. They're all kinds of shapes and sizes, it seems. I asked Mr. Hall if there was any explanation of why there were so many different shapes and sizes of these things.
Well, actually, it seems like there's a large variety of types of UFOs reported, but they boil down to maybe 8 or 10 distinct types. They're usually disc-shaped or egg-shaped or cigar-shaped. The cone-shaped is a little rarer, or has been until recently, but there are such reports described in the UFO evidence, including one just about 2 years ago of about 5 separate groups of policemen in Ohio who saw cone-shaped objects maneuvering around.
Mr. Hall, do you have any explanation as to why there are so few reports of cone-shaped objects?
That might be the late model.
Well, maybe that sounds a little ridiculous, but let's remember, if you were a little spaceman up there looking down upon us, you would probably wonder, too, why there are so many different types of cars running around. One of the other men we talked to, you've heard from him already, Mr. Paul Dickey, has for us a story now which he was a witness to, as were many other people, which took place during January, a sighting occurrence in Washington, D.C., which involved more than just the UFO. I asked Mr. Dickey if he would mind explaining exactly what happened that day.
Yes, I'd be glad to. It happened about 20 minutes past 4 o'clock in the afternoon. One of the engineers was closing the window in the building that we work and noticed to be looking out of the sky above the monument, noticed these peculiar objects and called a friend of mine. He went down there and immediately called me, and a whole crowd of us congregated at the windows. And in general, there were two clumps or two major groups of whitish almond-shaped objects which were being chased by a jet aircraft which had delta wing-shaped wings on them. These delta wings were on the back of the craft, so I don't know what type it is. I think we have an F-111 that folds back like that now, but could not be sure of the type of craft. But while observing these objects and trying to see the details on them, I did happen to see one of the jets pursuing it and turning right behind one of these objects. The object was slightly larger than the jet, and by that I could figure out how big the objects were, because I know just about how big most of our jets are. The object was about, I would say, 35 or 40 feet in diameter. And our calculations showed that they were about 12 to 15,000 feet and about 4 miles, 3.5 to 4 miles away from us. And we're moving well over 1,500 miles an hour. It might be interesting to note also that the Prime Minister of Japan was due to land at Andrews Air Force Base just a few miles away, 1/2 hour later than this sighting. So I imagine the government had good reason to have their jets up there protecting our official visitors.
That report from Mr. Dickey concerns a sighting in the Washington, D.C. area just a matter of weeks ago. Going back now to Mr. Hall, I read in the publication UFO Evidence that there were continual references throughout the book about the famous, and that's in quotes, UFO sightings in the Washington and General Virginia area during the year 1952. I asked Mr. Hall if he could give us some explanation for this, exactly why it was considered such a famous thing, and exactly what occurred during the July and August period of 1952 in the Washington and Virginia area.
Yes, 1952 was one of the peak periods of UFO sightings. I believe it still is, even by the Air Force's figures. There were something like 1,700 admitted sightings that year. Now, we call them famous UFO sightings because by this time the Air Force had already explained all UFOs away, but the UFOs didn't cooperate, and they came back and buzzed over the Capitol and the White House and over many restricted flying areas. They were tracked on radar. They were seen simultaneously by airline pilots who saw them right where the radar said they should be seen. And this went on for two consecutive weekends right over the heart of Washington.
Another section of NICAP's publication, the UFO Evidence, was concerned with something called angel's hair, which I was completely fascinated with. I asked Mr. Hall exactly what angel's hair was and how it does, if it does, tie in with UFO sightings.
Well, we don't really know what it is, but it's one of those borderline things where some of it seems to be explained as gossamer, which is web-like material that's spun by ballooning spiders. And quite often these reports of angel hair occur in the month of October, which is the migrating season for ballooning spiders. But there are other cases on record of material which is very much like gossamer, with the one big exception that it seems to dissipate if you touch it. There's no reason for gossamer to do this. The angel's hair disappears quite readily and is therefore extremely difficult to analyze, but it sometimes falls in great quantity and drapes itself over telephone poles and trees, and you would need thousands and thousands of spiders flying around to produce the quantity of material. So it's just one of these oddities that may or may not be related to UFOs.
Another question which we have not hit on the UFO question, and which we do not plan to indulge on long, but just as a sideline, I am putting it in this report. Going back once again to Mr. Paul Dickey, who you may remember is a member of NICAP and is employed as a communications engineer with the U.S. government. I asked Mr. Dickey if he knew of any attempts by private concerns or by the U.S. government itself of attempts to communicate with beings within these craft, presuming, of course, that there are beings within this craft, going even further, presuming that there are actually spacecrafts up there. Mr. Dickey had this reply for us.
Yes, I know of several different types of attempts to communicate. There have been attempts by people that I know of to communicate through light beams. These were unsuccessful to my knowledge. There have been attempts to communicate by radio. I have heard rumors that they were successful. I do not know of any successful ones. And then there have been communications that I am sure of by people that I know where information was beamed to them in a semi-telepathic manner, in which they received information from these beings in a telepathic manner, something like ESP. And this may sound strange, but on a scientific basis, I do believe that it is possible.
Believing that or not, it certainly is a very interesting idea. Going back once again to Mr. Hall, the acting director of the National Investigation Committee on Aerial Phenomenon, we asked Mr. Hall what NICAP does when they get a report of a UFO sighting.
Whenever possible, we try to go right to the witnesses and to get first-hand information. We have investigation units scattered around the country that go out in the field equipped with tape recorders and Geiger counters and other detection equipment. We try to get the first-hand information to check out possible explanations, to check on character, background of the individuals concerned. We do have a standard UFO report form, which we try to get witnesses to fill out.
My last question to Mr. Hall, the acting director of NICAP, was, quote, Mr. Hall, have you ever seen a flying saucer?
Not really. I saw one light phenomenon several years ago at night, but I wouldn't consider it a good UFO report. I couldn't explain it, but I couldn't even be sure it was a solid object. It was just a light darting around and back and forth. But I'm not the type that holds that seeing is believing, because I believe in Australia and I've never seen it.
This week's Impact Close-Up. This week, NICAP, the National Investigation Committee of Aerial Phenomenon. Our story for tonight is over, but NICAP's story is just beginning. In the weeks and months to come, a lot more will be heard from this organization. Whether you believe in flying saucers or not isn't really important, but I do believe you should have an open mind on the subject. If you do believe, or would just like more information on the idea itself, you may join NICAP for a yearly fee of $5. This entitles you to at least 6 bulletins a year, the bulletin referring to the UFO investigator. And for an additional $4, you can purchase the UFO evidence. If you would just like the UFO evidence alone, the price is $5. NICAP's address is 1536 Connecticut Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C. By the way, I too have never seen Australia, but I believe in it.